so tricky. I got it. It's locked in. And we fade out the intro music that none of you could hear because I'm the only one with headphones. We got a full house today. Karen Pischke's here.
Hi, Joey. Good morning.
Good morning. We have Greg Berger here.
Hello.
Pat and Jimmy Dalpiaz.
Good morning.
Regulars that I'm begging to move here because Pat always brings great topics to the podcast. I wanted to be a regular contributor on the blog. We're working on that.
Yeah, you are working very hard on that.
Yes,
we're working on that.
We have David Calvo, first time on the podcast.
Yeah, uh-huh. Good morning.
And Kim Smith.
Good morning,
my
Austin.
Regular co-host. It is Glosscast 205. Greg Verger's here to promote. You've been on. I asked you before, and you said it was a new radio show, but it's been going on since June, you said.
First show was June 15th.
June 15th.
Right.
And people can find it at www.msonewsports.com. MSO News Sport, newsports.com.
Right.
I have the link here, so people, you don't have to have that. But it's a music-based show.
Right. So the show's called Unfinished Music. They could also look for Unfinished Music on Facebook, the fan page. That way they can keep up with what's going on, what's coming up, and they can also find links to the past shows.
Is it all audio or is it visual video too?
It has been audio. Last show we tried a video stream, had some audio trouble with that, but I think we'll be back online at the next show. So I guess the answer is a little of both.
Yeah.
So primarily it's web radio, which is audio. So I can tell you about the origin of it if you like.
I would love to hear that.
So Rick Moore has had this news and sports web radio show for years. And when I was on the city council, I would sit down with him every couple of weeks and talk about what's going on in the city. So when I finished my term, he wanted me to come by now and again to talk about city business. And I says, really not interested in doing that anymore. And he says, well, we should do something else. And so since I'm a musician, I says, hey, how about a music show?
Your other passion.
That's right. So we set this up. It's called Unfinished Music because it's recorded in my unfinished basement.
And, right.
That's awesome.
And I shouldn't say recorded. It is recorded, but it's also streamed live.
Yeah.
So that's the key thing about it. So we stream live usually every other Wednesday at 3 o'clock, depending on the guest schedule. Sometimes we'll do it later at night. But we stream live, and within a few hours, the MP3 is loaded online so you can listen on demand. So the premise is we bring guests in, we talk about their projects, their gigs, whatever they've got going on. They perform in studio live, and we can play their recorded music. So it's been pretty good so far the last few weeks. I got to sit in with one of the guests a couple of days ago, played bass with him. But just to give people an idea who we've had, we had Dan King, John Jerome, Brian King, Charlie Banchini, Steve Carraway, Ricky Diamond, and last week we had Jeff Small joined by John Jerome. Coming up next week on the 26th, Chelsea Berry. Actually, this week, the 26th of October, this Wednesday. And then Alan Estes on November 9, and Megan Wolf, formerly Megan McKenzie, on 11/16.
That's a who's who of like the top tier glosser of local musicians right there.
That's the goal. So that's one reason I'm here, is to promote it, to get new listeners. But also, if there are other people around who would like to be on the show, the key is original music, because we don't have memberships to cover the fees to pay for copyrighted music. So if people have original music they want to come in and promote, perform for us, we're happy to have them.
I think it's Soul, my favorite local band right now is Soul Rebel Project. Just love it. I've actually purchased their, I haven't purchased an album in forever.
I
purchased their stuff because I listened to it when I put it on when I'm in the shower. It's just nice chill music. What?
And Craig posted a video up there. Is that
Craig? They were at Castle Hill Estate, and he did a drone video, and like up it was a packed house.
Wow.
Packed house, and so like that kind of, I mean, a stunning location to begin with. But Greg, so what do you use to record this stuff? Do you have multiple mics, or is there one mic in the middle?
Yeah, I've got a studio in my basement, and I've got a mixing board with like 12 channels, and so we all have our own mics. The guitarists will either plug into the board, or we'll mic the guitar if it's an acoustic guitar. Like I said last week, I was playing electric bass, so we have a digital piano. And then Rick has a bunch of, he uses some kind of Adobe software. So he's handling the engineering. I'm handling the sound in the studio, and then I feed it out to his laptop, and he handles all of that.
You hand him an MP3 file?
No, I mean, literally, the signal is going from the board to his computer.
Oh, wow.
And then it's streaming out to the world live.
Very cool.
So, and then, like I said, within a few hours, it's posted for on demand in case someone's missed it. And then I also send the guest a copy of the MP3 to do with whatever they want.
They can host it on their personal space.
Right.
Do you have a standalone website to just have all this stuff in one place?
Yes. If you go to msonewsports.com, look for the Unfinished Music tab. There's a basically a list of all the names I just mentioned. You can click and listen on demand to all those shows.
See, that's the key. Because, like, you know, these things, they happen in segments, and MSO has such a great amount of content and different programming.
Right.
So once you get bumped off the front page, it's easy to have. You know, it's nice to know you can go to the archives.
More than a couple of clicks.
You know, that was my biggest beef with K-Band TV was because all these people were creating this incredible content over there. And I spent a lot of time editing videos. It's not not like we're doing right here, one shot. You know, mistakes and all, flying. They're like editing, and then they'd show the programs on television a couple of times, and then they're put on a shelf.
Yeah.
And you couldn't access them.
Couldn't access it, right. Like,
that's kind of
tough. And when they put it on that Teleview thing, that takes multiple clicks to get to that. So it's much better that they're putting it on YouTube. They're putting a lot of content on YouTube.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Which is good. Which is
Google.
Good.
Yeah.
Google taking over the world.
Yeah.
So I just saw Chelsea Berry at the chapel at the Norton Estate. You said she's going to be on there on Thursday.
Wednesday.
Amazing. So I hope they all come listen to
Yeah, definitely.
Podcast.
So all of Chelsea's fans.
Chelsea's got a huge following.
Yes, right. She does. And she's doing a Kickstarter right now. She's trying to produce a second CD. So she's got a big Kickstarter.
Well, it's like her fourth or fifth CD. But she's. That's right. And so we should give her a plug for that Kickstarter. She's going to be playing. We're going to have a couple of her older tracks. You know, the recordings we're going to play, but she's going to focus for the live stuff all new material. So if you want to preview what's going to be on the next CD, certainly tune in.
She's probably, I'm thinking out of all the local musicians we have, she's probably the most, probably has the biggest shot at, like, you know, the big contract.
Yeah.
She's the most prominent. I mean, she's playing, opening for Livingston Taylor, and I looked at her schedule on her website, and she's not just playing the rum line, she's playing all over the country. It's pretty regular that she's out on the road. I mean, I happen to get her between two shows in Massachusetts. You know, the rest of the time she was out, you know, out of state.
Yeah, is she from Gloucester?
No, she's from Alaska.
But she lives here. She's living here right now.
Yeah, she's a Gloucester.
No, I know she's living here.
She came to go to Berkeley. But if people tune in to MSO News Sports on Wednesday, they can get all the...
I love it. Well, we'll have a link in there for you. So, you know, we'll talk about your show. Do you miss the side of politics and stuff?
Sometimes, you know, I look with frustration at what's going on. They're not talking about the controversial stuff, just the day-to-day routine stuff. In particular, my favorite, Fuller School, that topic. But it's difficult to sit in the sidelines and not have input into what's going on. But, you know, I wouldn't have this show if I were still in the council.
Yeah.
I would never thought to do it.
'Cause the time. I was looking this morning. I was looking. I don't know what I was scrolling through. I think I don't know what it was. I was scrolling through, and there was like a picture, and it was K-Band Television. I think it was on the blog. Did you put it on? The city council, not city council. It was a meeting with about the school thing.
Right, Catherine.
Was it Catherine posted it? Okay. And I saw, you know, you see the faces. This counselor's there, and then there's the school committee there, and everything else. And I'm saying to myself, God, thank God for the people that want to sit in those rooms, because I have
night after night
no desire at all. And like the time commitment that these people donate, there's no money involved.
The council is $11,500 a year.
Which is pennies per hour.
Right.
But since I left the council, I'm playing in two bands and I have the show. So it's kind of, you know, it's very liberating to not be on the council.
Yeah, I'm sure. God bless the people that donate their time.
It's a huge volunteer commitment.
Yeah. Well, for the ones, especially the ones that actually show up to the, you know, and actually read the materials, that would be to me the ungodly amount of material you have to sift through if you want to be informed on the issues, not just show up and kind of like.
Yeah, I mean, it's not usual for a good counselor. I'm not saying who's good or bad, to put in 30 plus hours a week. Between meetings, then there's usually 4 nights a week some commitment you have to go to.
So do you think you're going to run for a position the next time around?
Maybe, thinking about it.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens between now and then. I mean, we've got till next August to decide.
That was a tough election, that last election, because Paul, I considered all three mayoral candidates to be good counselors. They were all good counselors, so we had to lose two. Yeah. We talked about that a bunch of times on the podcast. So it was like, this is kind of like a very bittersweet kind of thing because we're going to lose two good, efficient,
no matter who got it,
we're going to lose two efficient counselors. But anyway, yeah, it'd be nice to see you back on the council. David Calvo is here, our buddy.
Yes.
Master woodworker. Is there something that, or did you give yourself the title master woodworker, or did you have to, or how do you earn that title?
Other people give it to you.
Other people give it to you.
No, there's no formality for it.
No formality.
No, no, no. It came out of the apprenticeship system when it was really a viable way to make a living and when they needed a lot of wood carvers. So then you had the tiering that goes on. But somebody, you went through a formal apprenticeship system and stuff like that. Now it's just if you write articles, if you teach classes, the scale of your work is kind of on the upper tier and stuff like that, they grandfather you in.
And you have a studio on East Main Street.
Yeah.
Do people ever pop in there?
Sometimes they do. I try to make it, you know, people friendly. You can jump in and you can come in anytime you want. But I'm going to put an open sign so people feel more comfortable.
That would make sense, right? Your website, just to get that out of the way, www.davidcalvo.com, CALVO.com.
Yeah.
And you update that.
Yeah.
To give people an idea of the scale of the work that you've done, I know about the replica, the Columbia,
right?
Which I don't know how many million dollars, but you did a lot of the.
I just did some detailing in the captain's quarters. So there was some little wood carving that they wanted to put in underneath. I guess there's a double set of bunk beds or something like that. So I carved some brackets that were going in the captain's quarters, which I have not yet been able to see.
What? Oh, you haven't seen it?
I tried to get in once, but I couldn't get onto the boat. So.
Well, next time they're in town, you come talk to me.
Okay. I'll get
you. What's some of the work that you're most proud of? Like some of the most prominent stuff, work that you've had placed?
I've done a lot of work for Harvard University. I did Sanders Theater. If anybody knows Sanders Theater, acoustically, it's kind of the acoustic model in terms of how the sound plays out in the room. But back then, they did a big restoration project on it, and they actually contracted the whole thing in terms of taking in bids and stuff like that. But with me, the university called me up and they said, we want you to do the work because we know if you do it, it'll be done right.
So very nice.
That's a big project. I've done stuff for Statue of Liberty Museum, some things for the Constitution. I've done stuff all over. I mean, I do stuff that goes all over the United States.
Yeah.
I worked for Andover Pipe Organ Company at one point. Fiss's first organ company when he was in Andover. Then he moved here, and then he started up a second organ company. And the first organ company, all the employees just stayed there.
Is that still in existence, the Andover?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Both companies are.
Yeah.
And both companies, I actually think, do well.
Yeah.
So. Do you ever pick up any work off the, you know, how the schooners and the brigantine, all these things that come to the East Gloucester Marine Railways, do they ever call you up and say, hey,
no.
David, we need...
No, I haven't heard from you.
I'm surprised.
Maybe you should put your name on
there. Say, hey, listen, if any of these things need a... Do they maybe they try to keep...
There.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, but it wouldn't hurt.
Viking?
Yeah.
Viking, yeah.
Yeah, great name.
Maybe they try to keep everything in-house. I don't know.
I heard that she's a real badass. She really runs a tight ship over there.
You have to.
Yes.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine dealing with all these fishermen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the egos and like, I could not imagine her job. There's there's certain jobs that you could not pay me enough.
Right.
Harbor master. There's a lobsterman's co-op on Cape Ann where there's no pleasing these people.
Uh-huh.
You know, you like no matter what, you're just not going to be. You know, and there's certain jobs, thankless jobs that, and I can't, like that is going to be a very difficult job. And she does a really good job. You know, that space. The East Gloucester Marine Railways.
Yeah, it's so awesome.
It's spotless. Yeah. Like, there's no piles of stuff. So she must have, because these guys, they're collectors. They're all fishermen are collectors, right? And they like, they, you know, you, yeah. If you're doing business with them, they're like, oh, can I leave this here for? I'm gonna get it out of here in a week.
You know, well, the person who told me that. She was saying it very complimentarily.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's really definitely a testament to stand up to some of those guys. Yeah, that's, yeah. But David, you also teach, you have these workshops.
Yeah, I teach a lot of
wood carving classes.
Uh-huh, yeah, people come from all over the place. I get them, people come from all over the United States. They've come from Canada. They've come from South Korea. I had a student this summer come from New Zealand, from Hawaii, all over the United States.
Now, when they come, do you already have a project that they're all going to work on the same project?
They all move through. I have a 5-day class, and it's all technique-driven to give them all the fundamentals. It's like learning a language, so you have to learn words, and you have to learn how to put together sentences, etc. So
how do people find out about your classes?
They find out through the web, really. The internet is just for a guy who's specialized and small like me. My website is like a silent partner, if not more.
Yeah.
So it helps a lot. And then I've written some articles, and I've been like the pro at certain trade shows and things like that. So my name is around in the wood carving industry.
Yeah. The thing about this is we talk about this is a recurring theme. There's many artists that are phenomenal artists, but they detest the marketing part of it, and they ignore it.
Right.
And then there's people, thank you, sweetheart, love you. And but then there's marginal artists that's all they do is. But you know, it's really important thing. How big is Facebook for you? As far as
you know what? I even tried advertising on Facebook. I don't know what the pull is on. It's hard to get what the statistics on because you don't know quite. They say when you pay, you can pay for
Views.
So many views. You can do zip codes, states, demographics, all this sort of stuff.
Keywords.
Keywords. Yeah. But on some level, it's hard to get a feeling for how much really actually comes back.
Yeah.
I've tried that. I thought that was the new way to advertise. But I got questions because I don't have any way to really understand what the feedback is.
Yeah, the insights to boil it down.
Yeah.
It's going to be tricky.
But it's tough if you're an artist and you're decent at what you do, the big issue for them is changing mindsets. It's different to be in a creative mindset and then go to a business, mm-hmm. marketing, administrative mindset. There's an organization called the New England Woodcarvers, and they brought me in as a guest speaker. And I talked about my stuff and things like that, and I had gone to one other meeting absolutely years ago. And at the end, all the guys came up to me, and their real question was, how do you make a living at this?
Yeah.
How do you make a living at this? Yeah. You know? Because it's a difficult thing to try to figure out how to market yourself. You have to brand yourself, come up with a story. There's a lot of things that are kind of involved that happen by your intent, and some things just happen as a matter of synchronicity or circumstances, and you find yourself in certain situations where you're elevated a little bit.
Sometimes things click. Like for John right. Sarkin, right?
Right.
Who's featured in Esquire magazine. And was Tom Cruise had bought a couple of his things,
right.
And they talked about it in this article on Esquire magazine.
Right.
From there,
that's
he was
right.
on, I don't know if it's ABC or CBS
yeah.
News.
He's
featured there. What's that?
It's on 60 Minutes.
60 Minutes,
yeah.
Right? And but there's been a bunch of clips that he sends in, and he markets. He acts like he's this, like, you know.
John Sarkis is very smart about marketing.
He is savvy. He acts, you know, there's always the photos of him with all the paintbrushes on the ground and everything this, and it's very organic.
Yeah, but that is the story.
That's exactly what you were talking about, and that's why I brought it up.
It's
critical. It's critical.
But there's a point.
But it's a click, like catching lightning in a bottle. Right.
That was an opportunity that just kind of made itself available. And so creative work, because it's so time-consuming, and usually people start in at it for the love of it rather than the finances of it.
Yeah.
And then they've got to transition it once it's taking up all their time, because they have to pay the bills. Okay, so then it's trying to figure out how to make that transition into making money off of it and moving it from just being the love of it.
They're not selling out. You know what I mean? Just like a musician, right? In the blog, right? So, like, you know, a musician, you love playing this style, but your audience loves this style that you happen to play one time,
right?
And all the hits come on this other style, but you're like, I guess I gotta play that fucking song. Everybody loves that song, right? And the blog, you know what I mean? For me, in the start of the blog, we were pretty, you know, out there and sarcastic and everything else. And then after you get beaten down by the, you know, you should be more respectful, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and the people not getting the sarcasm, and then, you know, you kind of vanilla-ize it because you have to appeal to the masses, you know. So it's all.
But you never know. Everybody always asks me about the classes. They say, how do you market your classes and stuff like that? I said, I do the same thing all the time, but I said, I have a tree in my front yard. On some days, it's filled with birds, and on other days, there's no birds on it at all. I have no reason why it goes from one to the other. It just happens. All of a sudden, one class I'll have, and all of a sudden, 12 people want to be involved in it. Then I'll have another class. I'll do all the exact same things, introducing Facebook, all this other stuff. I'll have 4 people in it.
If you could start a wood project tomorrow, and, you know, someone was going to finance it, and you could do, what would it be?
I've had one on the books for a while. I want to do a big Egyptian style bed, all carved with all Egyptian motifs all over it.
Oh,
a king size bed. And I always think that I should just do it, and I probably could sell it to a rapper or something like that. But I got to pay the bills and take care of my son, etc. So that ends up taking up a lot of time. But I have something in mind. I even bought the bed bolts. The first thing you got to do if you're going to make a bed is buy the bed bolts so you can put it together. I have those. They've been sitting on my shelf for a...
And you look at them and you're like...
I look at them. I just got to design the rest of the bed now.
That would be amazing. And I bet you, like, that might be your lightning in a bottle moment.
That right.
You know?
That'd be right.
Like, you know, some rapper buys it and gets featured on Rolling Stone magazine cover. He's, like, sitting in his bed with his two hoes. Like, you know, like...
You're singing my song.
Yeah, baby. Dollar bill, yeah.
I could see Cher buying that bed. Mm-hmm. Right? She's going on tour again, Cher.
Is she really?
Yeah.
She's the final tour once again.
I did have a rapper once call me from Florida. He wanted me to do this wall piece for him, right? And he's out at, listen, I'm out at dinner with my kids right now, but I'm going to call. I got this piece in mind. And we went back and forth a couple of times, but I don't know whatever happened to him. I actually should, now that we're talking about it, I should call him back, because a lot of times it needs a call, a return call from me.
I don't know about the wall, but I got this bed.
But he wanted a big wood carving for the wall, and I think it had to be, I don't think it was like a version of himself, but it was something close to that. You know what I mean?
How much chains are coming up.
So David, do you have a favorite wood?
Actually, I know some of the arborists in the area, so I use butternut, and I get it from here. It's locally. Mm-hmm. So, like when I did the Brass Monkey sign, that was all done in butternut. So mm-hmm. I try to work with wood that we have around here, and I go through. Wood technically is always kiln dried wood. Okay, they put it in an oven. They basically turn the heat up, and then what they use is they they pull the pressure out. So they what they do is they put it into a vacuum that sucks all the water out. And what happens is that the wood actually starts to turn into stone, because as a kid I was fascinated with petrified wood. And petrified wood is created by minerals, heat, and compression. So the wood that they're using today is really in the first stages of petrification. In the old days, what they used to do, and they still do it in Europe, is they go cut logs. Once they cut the logs, what they do is they stick it. So they'll put sticks in between all the different boards. And then they just let that dry ambientize, meaning naturally,
yeah.
Okay? And what happens is you end up with a board that is much lighter, has a lot more air in it, and is a lot softer. And I learned this because when I was, I trained in a studio across from the Museum of Fine Arts, and it was Cassieri and Di Beccari studio. And I said to my teacher, who was Arcangelo Cassieri, I had two teachers, Arcangelo Cassieri and Adio Di Beccari, but I said, Angelo, one day, I said, what is the romance with carving oak in all these churches? If you go to all these churches, it's all white oak. I said, it's like so hard to get through and blah, blah, you know. I said, why did you even think of using that wood? And he looked at me and he said, it's not the same white oak. So he shuffled himself. He was 82 at that time. He used to wear like a black turtleneck. He used to wear a beret. And we used to have a studio cat that used to live around his neck. Okay, so the cat was on his neck all the time. So we lived in this, I worked in this studio where when you walked into it, we never used to say anything to anybody because you felt like you walked into the Renaissance. It was that striking. Even when I first saw it, I was absolutely brought to silence. And when people walked in, they were in the same way. So he took me upstairs, which was a spiral staircase that went upstairs. We had this huge stage, which was like an 18-foot stage with all north diffused light, and we did all the big statues there in clay. And then we had a casting department. The casting department would then take those clay statues, make a mold, make a positive plaster, then make another rubber mold, and then that would get sent to the foundry for a bronze. Upstairs we used to have these studios that were called maquette studios, okay? So they were small studios, still with north light, okay? And we used to make all the models, and all the wood carving used to take place up there. So we went up this spiral staircase, Angelo in front of me, and he shuffles through all these pieces because the studio is just littered with plaster castings, books, everything. Like, these guys had been in business for 50 years, and they had at one point 12 wood carvers working for them and 12 clay modelers, and they were doing church work all over the United States.
Oh, wow,
it was unbelievable.
Right, yeah.
Unbelievable. So he hands me this piece of wood, okay? And it is as light as a feather and stuff like that. And he said, this is what we used to carve. The minute I picked up the wood, I said, I know exactly why you would carve this, okay?
Yeah.
It was light, airy, tight-grained.
Mm-hmm.
It would carve beautifully. It would carve absolutely beautifully. So the nature of wood has changed. And because the nature of wood has changed, the idea of people carving has changed a little bit, too. People still carve and stuff like that, but it's just like all the wooden planes and stuff like that that are still out there, still being manufactured. Everything with woodworking now is turning on and off a switch. It's all motorized. But if once upon a time, everybody was using hand planes, okay, with the spoke shaves, all this stuff, a shop was really a testament to handwork.
Mm.
Now it's not. Now everything is a motor. And that was because of the nature of the wood. The nature of the wood changed everything. Air-dried wood is so much different and so much more appealing than what people use now, which is basically wood in the first stages of becoming petrified.
Wow.
So do you have access to oak?
That's why I talked to the... I have... So this wood that I got was from Virginia. And in Virginia, they have what's called swamp white oak. And what does swamp white oak mean? It means that the wood had water for its whole lifetime. So it was very well moisturized and stuff like that. Those guys cut the wood, air dry it, etc.
Oh,
and so what they just do is they, with a magic marker, put my name on it and put it on a truck and it comes to me.
Wow.
So
is that what you use mostly?
I use the butternut. I like the butternut.
Yeah.
So do you have to air dry it for a while? Do you have a place, space to air dry it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've got wood in the basement. I've got wood outside. I've got wood all underneath my bed. I've got wood. There's wood every place.
All different stages of drying.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wood down the street. Yeah. Tons of wood.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I'm trying to learn. I'm just starting to learn.
About different woods?
Be a little bit more handy than
you're getting a little bit more handy. That's right.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
David was kind enough. He's like, so that the new red kettle that I got, the whoever one that Kim picked up, thank you very much, in Cambridge, the handle, I sent them a picture of the handle. I'm like, David, are these salvageable?
Yeah.
He goes, they're junk.
he goes,
bring me, send me a thing. And we'll fabricate.
We'll carve
something.
Up you some new ones.
Yeah, we'll carve up some new ones. So. Yeah, so I'm looking forward.
Lobster handle.
Yeah.
No. We're gonna do a classic, once he gets them, I want to put I think I'll put some of the tongue oil and then maybe some spar varnish on them, or maybe just the tongue oil, or maybe like that Minnewax product that has the stain in it and you think
you can use that?
What do you think?
I think you can become a Weber refurnishing refurbishing business. That's what I think.
I just picked up one.
Another one.
Yesterday.
That's
it's blue. It's the color of Pat's sweater.
Oh my god.
It is fucking stunning. And it's the old school one. It's the first generation with those classic lines, the squared off body.
Oh yeah.
And the stainless steel top.
Is it out there today?
No, because my truck is broken and it's in my backyard, and I would have loved to be cleaning it right now. But and yesterday I wanted to be cleaning it.
Is this another Craigslist find?
No, it was a new tool that I found to find things, but I'm not going to share it.
So that's the color of our Weber grill, and it had a wooden. What do you call this? The wood next to it where you put all your stuff.
Right.
Table.
The table and rack attached to it. That's
a gas grill, though, right?
No, it's a Weber charcoal grill. And it's
A design you don't know about.
You have to come by and see
with
it.
With Weber? With wood?
It's got a wood rack next to it, and it decayed. And my husband made a new one out of Ipe.
Uh-huh.
A what?
Ipe, which is really hardwood, right?
Yeah. Oh, I never even heard of that. Interesting.
You got to be careful with the exotic woods, because the exotic woods have all natural pesticides in it. And so what a lot of guys were doing was they were getting all this wood from all exotic woods, and they were using it like they use regular wood, and they're sanding it and stuff like that, and all of a sudden they're coming down with illnesses because of all the natural pesticides that are in the wood. Uh-huh. Dust is getting in the air, and they're breathing in the dust, and it's affecting their liver and their kidneys.
Jesus.
Good to know. That's what our deck is made of.
Well, don't sand it.
Yeah, right. No sanding.
Well, and they had that problem with wood turners. Wood turners would always be turning burrs and stuff, like, burls, you know what that is? It's like a fungus off of a tree. It's very colorful, looks beautiful when you
beautiful,
turn it on.
Right.
Yeah, but it's a fungus.
Really? Huh.
So they would wear a little mask and stuff like that. The fungus, if any of it was alive in the burl, they would breathe it in. You breathe it in, it goes into your lungs. Your lungs are a terrarium. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden they'd have this fungus in their lungs and they couldn't get rid of it.
I'm never going to go outside. You stop playing. Because I'm already not a wilderness person. And you're telling me about a dead tree that's going to have living organisms on it that are going to kill me? And now you're going to turn me off. I'm already off of the whole animal thing and the wilderness thing.
Uh-huh.
You're going to turn me off from the... I'm trying to get into this being handy.
I know.
Now you're going to put these things in front of me and they're going to make me not want to be handy?
Barriers.
I'm going to die from a dead piece of wood. It's going to kill me now.
I have a quick question.
Well,
for
I didn't
Dave.
Quite say that.
What's your favorite consignment that you've ever done?
What's my favorite
consignment
project
piece?
That I did?
Yeah.
I did a piece for a house in Manchester that I liked that was like based on a Homer piece where, the man on the boat with the flounder and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the boat and the barrel and everything like that, I thought it would lend itself. These people came to me and they said, listen, we want you to do something. It was one of these beautiful houses.
Tuck's Point.
Yeah. And so they said, you walk right into the house and smack right in front of you is this beautiful fireplace, terracotta fireplace. So they said, we want you to do something for that spot right there. I said, okay. They said, go home, think about it, and stuff like that. So I went back to my studio. I came up with a design. She came in for a minute. She took a look at it. The wife did. And she said, oh, that looks good. And I said, I think I'm going to do it in white oak because the rest of the house is in white oak and stuff like that. It might be interesting to do. So I worked it out, and because Homer did, there are certain things that you can do in painting that you can't necessarily do in wood carving. It's trickier because we work with one tone, and painters work with multiple colors on a very flat plane. Well, we're using just shadows, really, to create something three-dimensional because the wood is all the same color. So I did this piece, and I thought it would lend itself because of the boat and the oars and stuff like that, and there was like a little horizon line. That's, if you look at the Windsor Homer piece, the fog warning, there's a horizon line there. And the way I did that was I book-matched what's called sapwood, and sapwood is always lighter than the hardwood, okay? So then that little sapwood line was lighter, so all of a sudden there was this, the wood just lightened up just a little bit so that it looked like it was a horizon line on the water. So I went and the people had come to me in August and they said, can you install this? My daughter's having a wedding in August. I said, it's not completely done. I could do it, but the truth is you let me sit with it for a while, you'll get a better job. They said, okay, forget it. Call us when it's ready, okay? So then I was working on the piece. I had gone in at one other time and fitted it in to see how it would look. So then I called them on Thanksgiving morning. I said, what time are you eating? He said, oh, we're eating at about 2 o'clock or so. I said, do you mind if I show up at 11? He said, I'm going to install it for you. So I show up at 11. I had a certain system that I was going to rig it to the wall. That was already pre-established like that. I put it in there and stuff like that. They were in the other room cooking and stuff. They thought it was going to be like a longer ordeal. It was actually pretty much a matter of minutes, a half an hour at most. They both walk into the room and they say, it looks like it always was there.
Oh,
and that was the biggest compliment I've ever gotten from someone. It looked like
Seamless.
It was always there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that tells you that you hit it design-wise, and not only design-wise for the room, but also you struck a chord with them too. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's probably one of my... But that was in white oak, and it looked absolutely beautiful. There's a photo of it on my website.
Oh, may I pull that up for the show notes? If you can remind me when you send me the photo, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Want to make a note of that?
Yeah, I will do that.
Right now, do you want to make a note of that?
I'll do
it. Just kidding.
I can't remember things.
I wouldn't remember. There's going to be 5,000 thoughts between now and then. Karen, you were part. This is your first show at the Phyllis A?
It was their first show at the Phyllis A. They hadn't done this before.
Oh, I thought you had your first piece. I thought that's what you just said.
Yes. I had my first photograph there. I've been photographing for a while, but never had anything printed and ready for a show. So KPNG Clay printed one of my Good Harbor Beach scenes, and so I was excited about it, and I was just going to go drop off and leave. And it was such fun. I stayed the entire day there.
So a little backup. The Phyllis A. The Donna was big time involved.
She and Gloria Parsons.
And Gloria Parsons
were the ones that really put it
together. This huge installation of, there was maybe 30 artists there, maybe more. I'm not sure. But the cool part about this was that you got to go inside the Marine Railways building, the big one, where they, and then. That place has been there forever, and there's so much history and the huge machines that they use to work on these
right.
boats, and a lot of the old tools are still there. So you got to see the art
mixed in
with this really still functioning big piece of our waterfront in history. So it was a treat to go there.
It was unbelievable, and everybody that was there as artists really enjoyed it, and everyone that came through, and they had a great turnout. And I wanted to ask Donna how many artists there were. I think there was a lot of pieces there, and a nice variety. They had watercolor art, they had photography, they had metal art.
They had beach glass stuff.
Beach, yep.
They had
sea glass.
There was, I think my favorite artist there was that, I'd never heard of him before, but someone said that he's been around. Is John Abramson?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of him before?
I hadn't. And his pieces were scattered around, and you could go through the whole place and pick out his pieces easily because he had a really nice
distinct
style.
Yeah. There was one of, I think it was Lighthouse Beach. It was beautiful, really, really. And then there was one of the dory with the buoy and the reflection in the water, so it was like a mirrored image, you know.
And all the boats outside, like the, is that the fame? What's the other boat that was out
the
front?
Brigantine? I don't know what the name of that one was.
The Friendship?
The Friendship boat was out there, up on the railway.
Thank God for Pat Dalpiaz.
Yeah.
and it was all to renovate the Phyllis A, right? So they're trying to raise money.
Yeah, it was a fundraiser,
It was a fundraiser for the Phyllis A, and there was so much history, and that was the first time I met Doug Parsons and John Hinckley and Peter Souza, and, you know, just to talk to those guys and hear about their history was amazing for me. Mm. And then Peter went and got his guitar, and he and this guy Jeff started, you know, playing with the ukulele. So they had.
Did they do the shanties?
They did the shanties.
I missed it.
Oh wow!
So
I missed
the whole day. Was just like being in a dream or something.
Oh, that's great.
How cute is Peter Souza's daughter Zinnia?
Oh my gosh,
is she adorable?
You know what I said, Joey? If I had met a child like her 20 years ago, I might have had children. That's how cute she was.
Yeah.
That child is going to be a very special child. She's, you know, growing up around all this activity. I wouldn't be surprised. It wouldn't surprise me if she ends up being a schooner captain. Oh, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
She's growing up in that kind of thing.
She participates in the performances and stuff.
She's not shy at all. No. She's very cool. Yeah, very cute. Very cute. What's the wife's name?
Audie.
Spelled A-U-D-I.
And Audie was one of the artists there. She had beautiful artwork there, and Peter's mother-in-law had their art displayed there.
Audie's a painter.
Nice. Yeah.
Melissa Cox had that.
The beach glass.
The driftwood.
Driftwood with the
lace curtains cut up for sails.
Yeah, that was
very cool.
It was just one day, right?
It was just one day. A lot of people commented that they wished it was more than one day, but it is a working railway, so they're going to be hard at work on Monday. And, you know, Doug and his team, they did an amazing job of cleaning up the inside and making things safe for everybody and, you know, having paths around for people.
I bet you next year they do it 2 days.
Or a day and a half at least. You know, I think so too, because that was a big feedback.
Yeah, it's amazing how many different events happen up here and on air. It's absolutely unbelievable all the different stuff that's happening all the time. Just like Kim saying that she went to two things one night.
Right, next to each other, just in walking distance.
Yeah. Sometimes we get the press release. Sometimes we have weekends where we do the press releases.
Yeah,
and you just, you know, a big weekend here always is that that one with there's the Middle Street Walk. That day, there's like 5,000 things going on.
Oh my gosh.
We're so blessed. It's,
we are.
And last night they had the celebration of Ketman, too.
Oh, was that what was going on
at
the Cultural Center?
Yeah.
I saw the lights on and people kind of dressed up going in there.
Yeah, and what a history behind that man.
Yeah, big
time. And his wife Judith, she's just such a lovely woman.
Well, they were like staples down there. They're like, you know, who's like the godfather?
Yeah. And they had their artist, the resident artist program, which is really neat.
Yeah. Big history. The Gettermans on Rocky Neck. Mm-hmm. You know what's really cool behind that building? Have you ever seen the vista, the picture of like a John Nesta behind his studio from the water?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
It looks like something out of Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's right.
You know what I mean? The
Well, I'll tell you something really fun that they do. They feed all the ducks and Mr. Swan in the wintertime. So anytime you go back there, there's always wildlife back there. It's really cool. It's just like, you know, ducks everywhere, Mr. Swan, everything. It's really
fun. When we stayed at the accommodations, you look down.
There's always
the ducks right hanging out there.
Yeah, they feed them and they give them fresh water, which is... which is really nice because they need it, and especially like when Niles Pond is frozen over, they always have like a great big
bowl
tub of fresh water for the ducks and stuff.
Yeah, very sweet. I had no idea.
It's pretty over there.
Yeah.
Jimmy and Pat, you wanted to talk about you had a couple of experiences. You went to the Parker River National Wildlife Refuge.
Yes, we did.
What's that like?
That's about an hour's drive or so up towards Newburyport on Plum Island, and we didn't realize it that day, but it was the last day of National Wildlife Refuge Week, which is always the second full week in October. I looked it up before I came in. And so it was a free entrance.
Can I ask you a question?
Sorry.
Is that where Joppa Flats is? Is that close to there?
I didn't see that.
Is it a newer building?
Joppa Flats is near the...
Is near there?
It's right near the airport.
It's like a causeway that goes out there.
I'm trying to think if it's a place that I was at with the girls.
There's a little cultural center.
Yes.
There's a second floor.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We didn't go in that building.
Because it's on both sides of the road.
Did they have viewing sites for birds and stuff?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I get the right place.
Yeah, right. So there's ocean on one side, observation towers to the marsh on the other side.
Right.
And it was lovely. It's a lovely venue, and I took a lot of nice pictures. And we were, however, a little disappointed that we weren't seeing a lot of birds.
Mm. What time of day were you there?
It was after the podcast, I think. It was that day, so it had to be in the afternoon, probably mid-afternoon.
Bad time to go.
Yeah, well, and we had talked about how they were sort of between their migrating seasons.
Yes, that is true
right now.
Yeah.
But we had parked the car and talking about how we hadn't seen very many birds, and we're standing there, and we're watching these hawks. There was a pair of hawks, and this one hawk comes swooping right in front of my face. And this is big, and I'm just frozen. My camera's in my hand, and I'm frozen. And he's big, and he's black, and he's got orange eyes and an orange beak. I thought if Joey would be like, he'd never survive. Because it was like whooshing right at me. It was purposely coming over to say hello.
You can
that's
hear.
So funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, how
you
awesome.
Know,
wow.
It was awesome.
Wow.
And the only reaction I had was, did you get that?
Yeah.
No, because it can be startling.
Yes,
yeah.
It was startling.
Yeah.
It was startling.
Yeah.
But it was a very nice, nicely kept up place, and we had a great visit there.
You know who designed that is Cambridge 7. And Chris Muscoff, who was the lead architect on the Harbor Walk. So it was the same group of people.
Cambridge 7,
Chris Muscoff also designed that, the building and the walkways and things like that.
During Carolyn Kirk's tenure, they were like,
oh, okay.
They seemed like they would get grant after grant after grant. They did a lot of work. Cambridge 7 was, the names just kept being bandied around constantly, right?
They're huge. They designed the New England Aquarium. That was one of their
first. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so they've been around for a
while. They've been around for a long time. My client, Jerry Fondetti, who restored the Kendall Hotel in Willowdale Estate, he got his start working with Cambridge 7 back in the 70s.
So they're not some upstart.
No, they've been around for a long time.
Established.
Very established.
I bet you, like, if you looked at the list of some of their other buildings, if they did the aquarium, they probably got a big time list.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah,
so then you went to.
So later in the week, a few days later, we went to Castle Hill. The weather's been so beautiful, you have to do outside stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so we went to Castle Hill, and I don't know what it's called, but there's like this rolling lawn.
The rolling lawn, the great lawn.
The great lawn.
Yeah.
Okay, and you turn around and you look, and it's very Downton Abbey looking as you turn and you look. So we hiked up and down and up and down, and we got to the end and the top, and we looked out and on the water view, and there was Plum Island in the Parker National Wildlife Reserve.
Right there
on the other side. So we felt like we had made a complete
circle.
And if you had to drive there, it would probably take you 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to go up and around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been to Castle Hill. So
oh,
the
yes,
guy...
Very,
so the,
it's gorgeous. And I was thinking...
You know where the Crane Estate, where they made their fortune, right?
Toilets.
Crane toilets.
Oh, really?
When you see the
cranes,
the symbol on a toilet.
Those cranes? Those are the
That's how they made their fortune. That castle, whatever you want to call it, that estate, that mansion,
was paid for
with toilets.
With all those gardens and walkways,
I
thought it was something else. I would never saw it.
The gardens.
You didn't see it in the United States. You thought that was like you were over in England or something.
Yeah,
right?
You know, when I think of all the ornate, and someone created this pathway and created this rose garden that you're walking through.
Yeah.
And it's the same guy that created something that we look at all the time and
dumping.
Whether we're looking sitting or looking the other way, we're looking at.
Yeah.
And they had the irises were in full bloom, and there were other purple plants there that I don't know what they were, but there were lots of bees, mm-hmm. and moths and butterflies. Well, moths, I think they were. And I was like so happy to see all the bees. I'm not sure what kind they were. I thought you would probably know.
What kind of flowers were they hitting?
Irises. The purple irises.
But the bees were on the other purple flowers.
The other purple flowers. I don't know if it's lavender or
it's
if
like
it's...
the catmint?
That could be catmint.
Yeah,
okay. Like catmint.
Yeah.
Nepeta.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm puzzled by the irises in bloom, because the irises bloom in the spring.
I know.
There's a summer... iris is like a summer iris, but this was recent?
Yeah, yeah. I'll send it to you,
I would love to see it.
There we go. Oh, yeah, we can have an ID session. Yeah,
they have amazing concerts in the summer on the Great Lawn. Really?
Yeah.
They always end with...
I know. It's so Rebel Project... did we talk about that during the podcast, or is that put in the show notes?
I think that was in the podcast.
Okay, so, but anyway, and they do more and more of that. And it brought me back to when I was in my early 20s, Hammond Castle, on the lawn at Hammond Castle, they used to have reggae concerts.
Oh, I bet that was cool.
I bet that was so much fun. Wow.
My God, it was so much fun. You know, it's funny, I don't have a great memory, but I have a memory of being there for those events and saying, this is... we're not going to have many of these. They're going to put a stop to this. They're not going to let us have this kind of fun here. This is not going to keep going. It's just way too much fun. You know, even in today's day where they're trying to, legalize recreational marijuana, right. I think that they would still, it would be a stretch. You know, they try to do a lot with Hammond Castle. They have the, a lot more programming now than there
the
was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Huh?
The Halloween
thing, yeah. But I hope, you don't want to just make it about Halloween. Then that place becomes a glorified haunted house.
Yeah. Well,
there's more history.
They have the medieval fair there, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And Henry Allen just had some event that he's doing there. Is it a play that he's doing? I should know.
But he was Hammond. He was what, second in patents to Thomas Edison or something like that? What was the
it's
unbelievable.
There's a whole room dedicated
to it. Yeah.
There's a whole room dedicated to all his patents.
Right.
I gotta go back through. That's one of those places.
He built it for his bride. He built it as a gift for his bride.
Uh-huh.
And it's as a newlywed. Would you want to go into that? It's like dark and
cold.
Dank.
Be something out of Gray. What was that? 50 Shades of Gray.
It's more like Frankenstein's Castle.
The Gimp pops out of nowhere, right? Yeah.
I wanted to just say, just while you were talking about patents, I don't know if anybody's had a chance to see the special on, it's airing on PBS, like, continuously right now, on Thomas Edison. So fascinating, especially you guys as New Yorkers, I think
Fort Myers is an Edison museum.
Right.
Fort Myers.
Yeah, because every time we go down there.
It's a museum and a big parade.
There's like half the city is Edison this, Edison that. Yeah.
When I think of the Crane Estate and patents and things like that, I think about the Shimotaro Grill. I think that's where you're going to make your money, Jay. After this is done.
I'll tell you what, if I can make a living cooking on a Weber with a beer in my hand, that'd be a good day. Let me tell you what.
You could do a podcast right from the grill. You could do a lot of things right from it.
I'm telling you, they say if you can make your passion your life,
right.
That would be a lot of fun. That and podcasting, those are my two, and hanging out and watching my daughters play soccer. Those three things, if I could make a living watching my daughters play soccer, and then coming home, doing a grill session, and then podcasting about the whole thing, geez, life would be good.
It would be called The Life of Joey, now instead of The Life of Chrisley or whatever it is on.
Joey, you always got a big smile on your face, so life is good for you.
Life is great. Life has not been better. I'm in a good place right now. Kim, you went to the Jeremy Adams exhibit at the Cape Ann Museum called Voicing the Woods.
Yes, and it's spectacular, and I would just urge everybody to go see it, because these are just exquisite instruments that will be...
So people don't know.
Okay, so Jeremy Adams is a fabulous instrument maker located here in Gloucester. So it's just extraordinary that we have things like C.B. Fisk and Jeremy Adams.
And the Parker guy. Who's the guy that makes the guitars?
Ken Parker.
Ken Parker.
Great guitar maker.
Really?
Yeah.
So, So,
famous. I mean, very, like...
Rather famous.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like another world
and
famous.
He hand-delivers his guitars to Europe and everything like that. You should have him in here and chat with him for a little while.
I gotta get him in, yeah.
Because he went from a small operation to a big business and then decided it was all about management. He didn't want to do that anymore. Came back to Gloucester, builds them all himself, one by one.
One
and that's
one
what
one.
He's returned to.
Mm,
yeah.
Beautiful.
And like, they, like, do you know, does anybody know some of the guitars that he's, you know, the people that,
no, I don't
people,
know who he's given to.
I should know that.
I think he has a guitar in the Smithsonian now. I think
yeah.
he did one for the Smithsonian.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Okay,
go ahead. Get, let's get back. Let's get back to Jeremy Adams.
Right. So I just want to put a disclaimer in. I'm really good friends with Jeremy's wife, Kathleen.
Okay.
So Kathleen was she's the music director at the Annascombe Village Church. She's a mentor of my daughter. My daughter grew up playing on Jeremy Adams' organ and harpsichord, and and that beautiful organ that you see at the Annascombe Village Church was created by Jeremy, the pipe organ. So he not only builds organs, harpsichords, clavichords, and also he does this really fun, like, beautiful whimsical furniture as well. And the furniture...
How many pieces, roughly, did he have at the Cape Ann Museum?
At the Cape Ann Museum, probably, like, 20 pieces.
Wow.
Including the furniture that's down in the Daniel... Is it the Daniel Elias room? The room that's down on the first floor? They've, with the antique furniture, they've mixed in some of his... lamps and chairs and things like that. Like, he has a lamp with a trumpet base and another lamp that is activated by, you know what the bellows are in an organ.
Yeah.
So you press the bellows and it turns on the lamp. Yeah, it's so.
Geez, that's worthwhile to go. Go check it out.
Oh, it's
how long is it playing?
It's for 3 months. But the thing that I wanted to mention, and I put the schedule up last night, is that they've coordinated the exhibit with concerts and instrument demonstrations. So you can go and hear the instruments played and by master organ players, and there's even going to be an organ crawl that goes with it. An organ crawl is when you go from organ to organ around the community. And we have like...
That sounds exciting.
We have like 5 or 6 really outstanding organs right here in Gloucester. I mean, you know, like, I was never into organs until Kathleen and Jeremy and my daughter started playing them.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Stuff.
And your daughter ended up going on and got a master's in...
Yeah, she went to NYU, but that was for...
So that was like her impetus to want to... You know,
that's
a big part of her thing.
Yeah, Kathleen was just very, very, very instrumental, no pun intended, in Olivia's life. So.
Terrible pun.
It takes a lot, though, to make a complete instrument. I went once
it's
to New York to... Steinway had called me because they wanted me to carve a piano for them. So they said, come out to the factory, we'll give you a tour of the factory and everything like that. The factory is all broken down into... little individualized things that people have to do.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Once upon a time, one guy used to basically create the whole instrument, which takes a whole variety of different skills in order to do that. A whole variety, okay? Steinway no longer found those people anymore, so they broke it down into all these little pieces, and they got a couple of guys that walked through with them to kind of watch an organ go from, a piano go from the beginning to the end. So to have someone like Jeremy Adams, to have him around here, who is very reminiscent of that old craftsmanship where you did the whole thing, is extremely unique.
It's very unique, and some of the harpsichords are modeled after 1640 instruments. And then not only that, but he also paints them.
Right.
So like, you open up the harpsichord and there's this beautiful botanical
right.
Painting of
right.
butterflies and things like that.
Jesus.
Everything is
Renaissance, man.
Yeah, he truly, oh my gosh, he truly is. And
oh
my
God.
If you ever meet him,
I can't believe it.
Does
he work alone?
Block.
Do you know anything about him?
I think he does work alone. I've never seen
That's
photographs of other people, but
right.
He has the driest, wittiest sense of humor that you could... I mean, he just...
Is that the guy with the funny tie?
Yeah, with the big octopus on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Post to him yesterday.
Yes, that was very rare to get him to...
Was that his wife with him in the picture?
No, that was Christina Martin, Kathleen's best friend. But
oh, okay, sorry.
I couldn't... It was hard enough just to get a picture of Jeremy smiling. I dragged Christina over. I said, you've got to stand here next to Jeremy and make him look at me and make him...
He seemed like he had like a quirky little thing going on.
He is a very funny guy.
Yeah.
Very, very funny guy.
Cool.
Listen, you spend all that time alone. Can you imagine how much time he spends just by himself?
Yes.
You get a little quirky.
Speaking to Mr. Quirky with David Calvo, yeah,
I take it as a compliment.
There you go. That's how it was meant.
Lobsters by their first name down there.
Oh, Joey Dove?
Yes.
Kim, you also went, what was the other show you went to?
Well, it was, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it correctly. It was beautiful photographs by a friend of Danielle's, Gintara. It's spelled, I'm going to say it the way I've been spelling it phonetically, J-I-N-T-A-R-A, Gintara.
And when you say Danielle, you're talking about Danielle from Pastayo Vea Court, right. the on Center Street, her,
yes.
Her incredible artisan, homemade, handmade
everything,
pastas and cheeses.
Pastas.
And
Friday is cheese making day, so go Friday afternoon. You will not be disappointed. And then she also, we got to sample this wonderful salami that a friend of hers makes. I've never tasted such good salami. It has a little touch of fennel in it.
Joey, don't go there. Yeah.
He's got this thing about
it. I see it all over his face.
I've never tasted such wonderful salami.
Thank
Let me
you
tell you something,
it's
salami. Kim loves the salami over there. They got the best salami.
We're going to forget about the next topic.
I'm just joking.
It's
a key.
Yeah,
that's
probably not.
We're not going down.
Oh, what's the next topic? I don't know what we're talking about. What was
so
the next topic?
And Kim, Thursday's ravioli day, right?
Is it? Yes.
What day is the gnocchis? Does she make the gnocchis?
Is that the same day as ravioli day? I don't know.
No,
she
no
has
but
like
you have to. You have, it's good to put an order in ahead of you.
Yeah, for ravioli. Yeah.
She
ravioli
people have discovered that. This place. Though the cat is out of the bag.
Right.
You got to go check it out.
You got to go.
Yeah. She's good friends with Eric, our buddy Eric Lorden from Passports.
Yes, they're doing
they
all wonderful things together. They're cooking together and
they're making beautiful music.
And she's providing all the pasta now for the restaurant. So.
She provides a couple restaurants their pasta. Mm-hmm.
This is turning into a foodie town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's turning
into
one of the things.
Yeah, it's been on its way.
That's good for us.
Two thumbs up. The Backyard Growers Cooking Workshops at the Open Door for Children and Adults. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's, I think this Wednesday is the last one, but it's a wonderful program where, for kids and adults, where they have, I think last one was short and main chefs, and this week as well, but they have them demonstrating cooking techniques. They go out and they pick the vegetables in the garden that are growing at the Open Door pantry garden, pick the vegetables, then go in and get cooking demonstrations on the food.
And techniques on how to cook them,
yeah,
to use them.
Right, and then and it's open to the public as well, so if you want to register, go to the website.
Do you know what time it starts? I'd love to take my daughter there.
I might have written it down, but
it's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday, and it may be like 6:30, something like that.
I would love to take my daughters there.
It's on the website.
I would love that. All right, we gotta go. Well, I'll link to it in the show notes.
Okay.
Jimmy and Pat, you brought up they're doing some work at the former site of La Trattoria in the West End.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're working. We talked about it that they're extending the window front. I saw them were doing some stuff, and I was talking to some of the guys, and they said that they're bringing another restaurant in. And I was joking with him, what are they going to name this Italian restaurant? And he said to me, no, this is going to be a very American restaurant.
American
That's all
bistro kind of food. Very cool. I love it. There's two apartments up above it. They have cool views. One looks like all the way down the West End, and the other one, they have like the way the windows are set up, you can see all the way down, up Main Street the other way. Really, really cool setups. If I was single, I would rent one of those in a heartbeat because you're right there.
Yeah,
right. You know, I got Vigilio's. You got Cafe Sicilia. You got all the restaurants.
There are a
number
of
nice.
If they turned that, pardon me, sorry. I was just gonna say it would be fun if they turned that parking lot into outdoor seating somehow. It'd be awfully fun to have like outdoor seating on Main Street.
Yeah, but I think you need that. Yeah, it would be, but I think you'd probably need the parking for the apartments.
Oh yeah, for the apartments.
Right.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Oh yeah.
Pat, you went to what did you use? Did you use your Serenity card, your free Serenity card?
I did. We went to Lat 43 this week and used the Serenity card, and I got a free appetizer, a free entree, and a free dessert.
What? Wow.
Off my Serenity card. It was a no-brainer. I think it saved us around $50.
For free?
Yeah.
To sign up?
Yes.
Craziness.
Absolutely. And the service was excellent. There was a young man, a man who was our waiter, and he was just excellent. It made the experience even better. Jim had the bouillabaisse, and I had the fish and chips, I think. Key lime pie for dessert. Oh, the shrimp for the appetizer. Huge, absolutely huge shrimp. Really big shrimp.
Wow.
I took a picture of it because they were so big.
I might have to order that.
Yeah, yeah. It was great.
On your birthday month, you get an email, and anytime during that month, you can go in there and have an entree. It could be the most expensive entree. It could be a $30 entree.
Right.
It's free.
Yep.
Yes.
And dessert for your. I think you get them both for your birthday.
And a
month.
Free dessert. Well,
I think it's entree and dessert.
Whoa. I don't know. I didn't read that far.
I'm sure.
But I have to go. I have another. I have 6 days to use my entree.
Yeah.
On my birthday.
Definitely.
We have a very special podcast next week.
We do?
Well, my birthday.
Okay. National holiday.
Yes.
In Gloucester.
What? National holiday, yes.
In Gloucester.
National holiday. Kim, this is a cool topic that you brought up in the show notes, that the alcohol wholesalers lobby has been putting, you said that, would you read this in the Times?
I read this in the Gloucester Times.
Oh, so give credit to them.
Yes.
Gloucester Daily Times wrote.
One issue this week, I can't remember what day it was.
$75.
$75,000
to the lobby against legalizing recreational marijuana. Ballot question number 4. How interesting is that? And
yeah, that was really startling to read that.
So does that make you want to, like, you may have been on the fence before, and knowing that, now you, like, might push you to say, no, we should legalize it.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? I'm just saying, like, that, just knowing that.
That would be one of those kinds of pieces of information.
It's,
yes. That's
it's ridiculous. If it was some religious group or something, you say, okay, well, they're doing it, or some health-oriented group, but... These guys are hypocrites.
Right.
I feel like
exactly.
The tobacco lobby saying, "Oh, geez, you shouldn't legalize marijuana. That's bad." You know, it's terrible. I mean, I go back to when the medical marijuana passed overwhelmingly here in Gloucester and statewide, and there was some on the city council who wanted to write up an ordinance that basically would disallow in a medical marijuana facility. Like, you can't do that. You know, the voters
just passed it. Yeah.
So we did write up one that, you know, sort of modeled it on where new liquor licenses are permissible. And then it still became a pissing match out in Condolin Road, you know, where the neighbors fought that. And so I saw some posts about that, and I responded, say, how many of you voted when it was on the ballot? You know, it's like, it was okay until it was in my backyard.
So, right. Oh, so, well, that's the East Gloucester thing right now with the schools. Like, it's
they have 2
pretty comical.
I heard.
Well, that's a whole different story. The one that got kicked out of Condolin is now trying to get onto Blackburn, where the other one was already there first.
So we posted, I think it was last week or the week before, we posted the notice.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the League of Women Voters were putting on this information session, and they had the pro and the con person? Hey, there was someone left a nasty comment, like, you're a disgusting pig for even posting this.
Really?
Like, you know, everybody has their thing, you know, they're like hardcore against this.
Wow.
Whatever.
Well, no, I just thought it was super hypocritical.
Oh yeah.
There's myriad problems associated with alcohol and alcoholism, and I don't know. I think marijuana is the safer, you know, of the two choices for.
My argument with it is I support it, and if it's all of a sudden legal, I'm not going to go out and buy a joint. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
no.
The thing is, you're putting blinders on by thinking that if you vote no, it's okay. Well, no,
it's
we have no marijuana.
Right. Then
it's like,
it's
so right now we're supported. No, we, the people who use marijuana, supporting the cartels. You know.
Right.
You know, in the whole underground black market of the marijuana industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, why not tax it and regulate it?
Right,
that way, you know what the people are smoking or ingesting in other ways is safer than. You know, there was some guy in the corner says, here's a little baggie of stuff. Was it parsley or is it, you know, battery acid, who knows?
Right. And as you said, you're not supporting the cartels, which I think is the worst part of it all. Mm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, that was interesting. It broke down to $50,000 from the alcohol wholesalers.
This is statewide?
Yeah, this is...
So, yeah, in all fairness, like $75,000 to us personally sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah, but it's...
$75,000
is
not a whole lot of money for a statewide thing.
It's $25,000 from the beer distributors of Massachusetts and $50,000 from the wine and spirits wholesalers. So, I know, but they should just be... I mean, their claim... The thing is that it was reported in the paper is that they're claiming to be neutral. But in the meantime... so, they...
Oh man, it is hypocritical. But if we are naive to think that every single thing that comes down the pipe that there isn't lobbyists on both sides of it, then we're kind of silly.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, that was funny. The seahorse thing got a lot of play. We got how many news organizations contacted you about that?
Just NECN.
That was it?
But the NECN woman, Caitlin, also reported for NBC, so
okay.
I don't know if...
Because I saw some of those comments coming in from the reporters asking for usage. I just forwarded them over to you.
Yeah.
So
I got one from you. I got one email from you.
Yeah. So Tony Gross, one of our lobstermen, caught a seahorse. Not his first seahorse either.
Right. It was his fourth one, actually. Second one this week, even. And he said they feed on the little tiny crustaceans on the bait trap. So I was wondering if you could show me what like the bait trap looks like and stuff like that. I was just curious.
Lobster trap, he's talking.
Yeah, but
you've seen a lobster trap.
No,
a million of them in the pond.
But is there like an area where there's bait?
I have a picture of those crustaceans.
Yeah.
The bait bag is in the trap.
The bait bag. That's what I meant. The bait bag that's in the trap.
Oh, so they kind of hover around it and pick at it.
Yes. Yeah, and also this way they can latch their tail around it as well. Because seahorses aren't very strong swimmers. So they need to latch on to feed on things. So, and then I also
we have to say this because no matter what we do, when we have one of these oddities that happen,
we get
a minimum of 5 comments of you should release it. He released it.
He released it. Like Tony's whole plan was to try to give it to the New England Aquarium, and so he's waiting and waiting for them to contact him. And so in the meantime, he released it because a seahorse has no stomach, so it has to eat continuously. So he released it, and then shortly thereafter, New England Aquarium called them. So
I stopped trying to call the aquarium when we have those oddities because
they're weird.
There's always a myriad of excuses why they can't come pick it up.
Right.
Seahorses were harmed in the taping of this podcast.
Oh, thank you, Pat. I should have put that in.
We want to make sure we include that.
We have got to get her. We have to find
her
a place.
Just in case.
You have to move up here.
So I'm so surprised that there's even seahorses up here. I don't think of them being up here.
I know.
Being down
right.
in warmer waters.
Do you want me to tell you what I learned? I read that they have been found as far north as Nova Scotia, but they don't breed any further usually than Cape Cod. So it's not too much to, think of them coming around the, horn there, around the Cape, to come this far. But
that's a little seahorse that isn't a good swimmer. They're getting blown by currents.
Yeah, currents and the warm. And
so,
we've been having a little bit warmer water.
I don't know how many of you guys take rides around the back shore at night. Anybody?
Yes.
You?
Yeah.
Recently?
Yeah.
Have you noticed off of, what's the island? Where the Twin Lights, Thatcher Island.
Right.
To the right of Thatcher Island, because I go down Moreland and take a right to get home, every night for the past 3 weeks or so, there's like a floating city. Because all these boats now have these huge LED lights, which the LED lights put out tremendous volume of really clear light. So there's been this pack of like 40 to 80 tuna fishing boats because the tuna are migrating south right now. There's an enormous amount of tuna being landed right now.
Oh, wow.
And so if you look at the map right there, Cape Ann sticks out. You know, so as they're coming down, they come right around that little—that's the bump, right? Halibut Point, and then thing there. So they're coming down like this. They're just outside of that, catching the tuna, as they migrated down.
I was wondering what those lakes were about.
It's like a floating city. Like these guys, they're so close to each other, they could, like, from here to that door, that's how close they're fishing. They're anchored, and they're getting crossed up, and there's a lot of arguments out there.
Sure, yeah.
Those are my numbers. Those are my numbers. Those are my numbers. So, no. So
I've seen that Wicked Tuna, on the TV show, they talk about that someone takes their area and gets too close and crosses the lines, and
they really dramatize it for the show, too.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to have Dave and Nancy back again. I was thinking
we'd love to have them back on anytime.
Finding out if they're working on anything, they can come and talk about.
Kudos to Donna. She got on WBC, is it? When she put her picture out.
The high tide picture,
The high tide at...
Oh, really? Well, yeah. NECN, was it?
Yeah. And
she WBZ. It was on there. BZ. I remember writing it down.
All of a sudden, on TV, they put a picture, and they said, photo courtesy of by Donna.
Awesome.
Donna. The last name, they couldn't.
Donna Arizoni from Southern Massachusetts.
So it's great. She's got on TV.
There you
Donna
go.
From Gloucester.
All right. This is one of our longer ones, hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. We're going to the sushi tonight?
What?
Tuna sushi tonight? All this tuna coming in?
Tuna what?
Sushi.
Tuna sushi.
Tuna sushi tonight. Is studio still doing their half
off? Oh, yeah. It's right now, I mean, I've been there 3 times this past week. Half off everything at the studio. Yeah. Half off.
And they told us...
Everything at the studio.
They just told us yesterday they're probably going to be open at least all of next week. He had said it was going to be a couple more days, but we spoke to one of the employees yesterday when we went by there and asked him how much longer, and he thought it might be the whole
week. I asked the PR person, and I says, how many more days? She said they weren't sure.
Right. They're not.
So I wrote a couple more days.
Right.
And people took it like a couple more days, like 2 or 3 more days. Mm-hmm. But it's
dependent on...
It's probably through the third, end of the... through next week.
Right.
Next weekend.
Because
probably
the weather's going to turn.
Right.
And
probably Sunday, but if it looks like it's going to be a washout. But I got to tell you something. It doesn't... Like, I was there, last night. Was it last night? Yeah, last night. It was raining sideways, and it was packed in there.
Yeah.
People
are
going because of this half-off deal.
Right.
You're crazy not to take advantage
of
it. Bananas, half-off sushi included.
I love that scampi that they do with that.
I had it last night. I had lobster scampi last night. It's $26 on the menu, $13. Ungodly amounts of lobster. It was more than a lobster. It was definitely more than a lobster in there, and a worth of meat. And it's fresh meat.
They
don't use frozen meat.
They got the veggies in there too with it, and they're just delicious.
So I asked for extra garlic. Okay, I came from the airport. We went directly there from the airport because she was coming in from Mexico. And I asked for extra garlic, and she looked at me like, really?
Really? Are you sure? Are you sure you want to have
it? Thank you.
So I shared it with her so we could mutually enjoy each other's garlic breath throughout the evening. So take advantage of that. There's a lot of good deals. Oh, we should mention Tano is wearing pink shirts in recognition of Breast Cancer Awareness for the month.
Does anybody know this? Is that why the light at City Hall
is
pink? Okay.
Yeah,
we did
get confirmation of that.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
That's sweet.
It
looks pretty.
It looks pretty, but I feel like I'm not going to say anything about it. I just think that, like, you should... It could be confusing, maybe, for people. It's a nice gesture, but no one knows. That should be used for emergencies, I almost feel like.
Oh, okay.
But God forbid you said that, because, then you sound like you're against breast cancer awareness, which obviously no one is. But, yeah. No, it's a nice gesture. We'll leave it like that. Right? That's the smart thing to do. Just shut up. Right? GloucesterCast 205 is in the books. Thanks, guys, for coming.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.